So for those of you I haven't met, my name's Monica Marani, and I'm so privileged to be the partner of this beautiful man on my right. And my role in the Cryon work is to gather the information and present it back to the tribe in a way that's been categorized and organized. So that's the purpose and drive of my work. And the three books that I first wrote as a trilogy focus on three subjects: Gaia, the Akash, and the human soul. And the most recent book, of course, is perfect for this time right now. It's called The Women of Lemuria, because it was the women who were the original shamans on the planet. And this whole land where we're walking, it was the women that brought the wisdom to the Egyptians. So back to the Sphinx, now that you know who I am and why I'm standing up here. Back to the Sphinx. What I discovered is there's something called the Sphinx water erosion hypothesis. Now, this was first postulated in the 1950s by a French mystic, was also considered a French alternative Egyptologist. And his theory was that the enclosure walls surrounding the Sphinx had water erosion from prolonged periods of heavy rain. Because when you date structures, you either do carbon dating or you turn to geologists who understand water pattern and erosion and weathering, and they can give you timelines for when structures are built due to the erosion that they suffer. But that theory was very quickly discounted. It doesn't fit in the timeline of what all the other Egyptologists study. However, something interesting happened. It was in the 1980s, and there was another alternative Egyptologist. Only this time, he asked somebody he knew was an associate professor of natural science from the Boston University, please come and take a look and tell me what you think is happening here. Same exact conclusion. The enclosure walls around the Sphinx have happened through prolonged periods of heavy rain. Well, so what, you might say? Why is that so important? Well, here is why it's relevant. If you look at the climatological data, the only time that that type of erosion could have taken place was 12,000 years ago. So here we go. Somebody telling us the timeline for the Sphinx is twice as old as what the current model has us believe. And so I feel that our way of analyzing and looking at history shifts and changes and moves just like the sands of Egypt. As we gain new information and new technology, we have to sift like the sand to change what we thought we knew. But sometimes those changes are hard, because as Lee says in his lectures, don't confuse me with anything I don't know. So I just wanted to share that with you. You can find out more information on the internet and the names of all, because he's a French guy, I can't pronounce his name. And you can look at all that research on the internet when you Google the Sphinx water erosion hypothesis. And there's been some really smart videos that demonstrate the water erosion. And the erosion that we're talking about is more evident on the other side of the Sphinx. So here we have a beautiful example of some humans who are stepping outside the box and telling us different timelines to what is currently believed in the current model. So I'm sure there's a lot more that Cryon's going to share about the Sphinx, but I wanted to give you that as our background. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Now, before Lon comes up and we start the meditation and channel, let me just continue with some things you may not have heard from myself or my work or Greg Braden's work. But Kryon dates civilization far differently than civilization dates civilization. If you look in the textbooks or ask the historians, they will say that 6,000 to 7,000 years ago, here or anywhere else, this is what took place. But if you go back 12,000 or 15,000, what you're going to hear is we were hunters and gatherers. That we didn't even have the wheel yet. Now, what Kryon has said is this goes back 30 to 40,000 years. We have been civilized doing these things. When I was in Istanbul, Kryon gave a channel called History Before History, when he said there would be things found that you won't believe because with carbon dating and other methods, they will predate anything that you thought could possibly be there with civilized people. Not only that, there will be languages that have never been seen before, and artifacts that are even being discovered now, such as the ones at Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, that have depictions of the solar system complete with Saturn's with rings, and that has been dated at 11,000. Greg Braden talks about what the Tibetans have said in their libraries, that we go back at least 30,000 years. So you see, it's starting to occur in various places, not necessarily academic, because academics, once they are decided what they have, they don't move much. So it has to slap them in the face and be proven time after time before the textbooks or the universities will change. And I finally tell you, the only real kicker in all of this is when you go to Australia and they have done the DNA research on the Aborigine, and they have discovered that the Aborigine, through DNA, has lived on the land, looking like they are, doing what they do, speaking the languages they speak, for over 50,000 years. So, it means that when Moses was doing his thing, they were already about 35,000 years old. So this is, call it the fly in the ointment to archaeologists, having discovered a civilization which DNA now shows have been there all of this time. They weren't hunters and gatherers. It doesn't make sense that they would be there doing what they did, but across the planet we would know nothing and didn't even have the wheel. So you see, we might be a lot older than we think. And I give you all of that just so you know there's a little bit of substance even behind the things that Kryon is discussing.
You may close your eyes if you feel appropriate. Relax. Give intent to your connection with the space we are in at the Sphinx in Giza. Breathe slowly, deeply, connecting deeper with yourself, with your multidimensional self that speaks to the multidimensionality of this space, of the Sphinx that here that have seen so many things and is now seeing you, being with you, loving you, honoring you, embracing you. You had some time before our gathering already to feel the energy privately as a group. And as you walked in, many of you were drawn to the palms of the Sphinx. Something led you there. And some of you don't know why, just inviting It's loving, it's safe, it's nurturing. There is a sense of mother here. Let that feeling of motherhood be with you now even deeper. That nurturing, unconditional love. Even if you're comfortable, allow this Sphinx just for a moment to love you as a mother loves her children. Feel your heart connecting with the heart that is in this space. It is a metaphor, but it is energy. Let your mind rest. Let your thoughts leave you for this moment and anchor yourself deeper. Breathe gently. Feel the air down here where we're sitting. Feel the warmth of the sun. The ground beneath you, the rocks, and the structure of the Sphinx. And try to go back for a moment. If the Sphinx was here, and it was here thousands of years before archaeologists said it is, where were you back then? Let yourself feel that time. It does not have to have a name, but an image or a feeling or a sense. Anything that comes to your mind helps you connect more to that ancient self of you that has been also here through many, many lifetimes. Go there for just a moment. Feel the anciency of your soul that is everlasting, that is all-seeing and all-knowing, and that constantly exist in a vibration within you. And all we need to do is find a moment to listen to it when we most need it. Breathe. The soul that always speaks to you intuitively or through the heart, always with you, because it is you. Let that motherly love increase within you. Also extend that love to all that's around us, all the visitors, all the vendors, let that love expand from here as we create a stronger level of coherence between us. It can be felt unseenly by everyone around you. Breathe. Go further, as much as you allow it. Breathe, feel, sense, imagine all those levels of experiences converging right now in you. As we listen to the wisdom, to the guidance, and to the love from Kryon.
Greetings, dear ones. I'm Kryon of Magnetic Service. We sit with a group yet again in front of a symbol that is known worldwide, recognizable, and mysterious. We are in Egypt and we sit at the base of the Sphinx. And what I wish to tell you yet again now is going to be so different than what history at this point in time agrees with. Are you aware that the truth of history changes with discovery? And so history is never always accurate. History is the best we can do as humans, the best you can do, in order to put together a puzzle based upon what you think you know or what happened. And so when you gaze upon the Sphinx, you will say it is part of Egypt. And it looks like part of Egypt. Not only that, it's next to the pyramids. Therefore, those who built the pyramids built the Sphinx. We told you last time we were here, dear ones, that that is not so. There are many hints that is not so. And you can take a look at common sense. The first is this. When the kings, the pharaohs, and their families built things, they built them together. They built them all on the same level plane of dirt. They were all surrounding themselves. Those were often memorials or tombs. Later you find the tombs going underground, but dear ones, the Sphinx is not a tomb. So what would you say the Sphinx is? Well, number one, I want you to see the level at which it sits. It is far, far deeper than the pyramids directly around it. So do you think the Egyptians, when they didn't dig for any of the pyramids, decided to dig this one? I'll tell you what it is, and it flies in the face of everything you're ever going to be told until later, when they can actually age the dirt. And that's coming as well. You know what it is? Get ready. The Sphinx is an archaeological find that the Egyptians found. Did you get that? You just came, many of you, from archaeological digs where they went in and discovered things that were left for you to find. This was a find by the Egyptians. And they started to uncover it. And when they did, they loved what they saw. For the Sphinx actually has meaning to them. And they realized, although it was far older than who they were, there were some magic things here. And the magic was how they could see their own history beyond what they ever thought they had. And it looked similar to the things that they wanted, but not similar enough. And that's the next one. Prepare for eye rolling. I want you to take a very close look at the head of the Sphinx. If indeed the Sphinx was buried and then dug up and buried and dug up and buried many, many, many thousands of years, you realize that in the process, you're going to see a certain erosion pattern in the body. And you do. And it's severe. It's old. Now take a good look at the head. The head should be every bit as disturbed. In fact, even more, because it would stick out through the sand and have more erosion than the body, and it has less. Take a look. It's the wrong head. It is typical and even proper in Egyptology to see the defacing of those statues and the faces of them when another conqueror comes in, because what you do is take off the meaningful things like the heads and the faces of the previous dynasty and put on the ones of your own. And you will see it throughout Egypt. We'll take a look, because this head belongs to a pharaoh, and it is the wrong age. So they decided to take this for their own as a beautiful archaeological find and make it their own with pathways to it, with the head of their own design of a pharaoh, and that is what the Sphinx has become. Now, when will this ever become common knowledge? And the answer is only when there's technology that will see age differences in the dirt. Ah, but there are a couple of hints yet to be discovered. Lifting moving stones is an art for the Egyptians. And if they want them to look a certain way and be intact, they move them a certain way so there are no holes. But dear ones, in order to lift and position, especially with rock to rock that's vertical, they drill holes. And much like even today's construction of cement on cement, there's often a rod between them. You're not going to find a rod, but you may very well find evidence of holes that go through the head to the body. Nothing in them, because what it was that they used to cement those has eroded. It's not rock. It was put there. And that's coming. So expect that discovery, and that will be holes in the head for no apparent reason, of course, unless you have listened to a Cryon channel. Does it surprise you that the Egyptians had their own archaeological finds? Does it surprise you that perhaps the Egyptians had museums? Egyptologists will come across an Egyptian find, and no thinking will really be there to say, what if what we're discovering doesn't belong to them, but was a museum of theirs? You see how confusing that could be? Because in linearity, even the most wonderful historians don't give credit to other civilizations studying the civilizations before theirs and having artifacts of theirs. And this is one. It's a beautiful find, dear one. And when you stand up, I want you to envision something else. This Sphinx was built, designed, and displayed by those who created it in full color. In full color. This was beautiful. Did you notice that surrounding it, it almost looks like a tub? That was a water feature. Indeed, there was water around the Sphinx when it was built for the reasons you'd think, so that it was beautiful. What a find they had. It doesn't belong to the pharaohs. I want you to see something else that has been speculation. If you've noticed that even the pharaoh's head has been defaced, the nose is gone. That means that another conqueror came in and defaced even the pharaoh's new face that he put on in the old Sphinx. You will see this throughout Egypt, dear ones, that the defacing of a statue takes away its essence. For if it is complete, even a statue is believed to have an essence. a remembrance of the soul. So by taking its nose away or scratching its face, you take away the essence, and then you can either put yours in place or leave it alone. But this is the way the conquerors felt, and this was the consciousness of the day. And so you're going to see a lot of broken noses. There will be those who listen to this channel and think how quaint, how crazy this New Age channeler might be. There is going to come a time when everything I've just told you will be in the books for you to read, and the children will know what I just said. You don't know what you don't know at this point in time, but whereas history never corrected it, technology will. And in many of your lifetimes, this will occur. Finally, this. The great psychic Edward Casey was talking about the chamber beneath the Sphinx. And all through the metaphysical history that speaks of the Sphinx, there's always this, a supposition, an idea, a tradition, that there's more here than meets the eye, that there are doors to be found and chambers. Dear ones, this has been looked at and looked at and looked at. The scientists, the archaeological ones who examine are not foolish here. They have looked everywhere. You sit here. Do you see the opening? Neither did they. What could this be? And I'm going to say this yet again. In this channeling that is information given from one source to another in this fashion, so much is being done with metaphors. The quatrains of Nostradamus, all metaphors. The scripture you've called the Holy Bible. So many times the verses and verses are metaphoric and not actual. The idea of that chamber was a metaphor. What do you have in a chamber normally? What would you find there? Well, you would either find treasure, or within that treasure there would be books. So the metaphor of a chamber beneath the Sphinx is knowledge. There is mystery here. There are things to be discovered here, not physically under the Sphinx in the way that he said, but metaphorically, there still is mystery. And the mystery is of a civilization, perhaps, that understood that consciousness was energy. And perhaps when they built it, they chanted. Perhaps there were songs around the building of them. Perhaps the sound itself resounds in the Sphinx. What do you think? Do you see what I'm saying? Consciousness is energy. What if it was in the rock itself? There is much here to look at and to celebrate and to appreciate. Go away with a smile and say, I know a little more about you today, Sphinx. Both of you, the top and the bottom. And so it is.